there's a progression there. I told you to write it down.
Welcome back, coaches, to the Talking Spook podcast. I am, again, Rob Calder, joined by old faithful Nathan Cooper-Brown. Welcome, Coops.
Good to see you, Robbie.
Joined by, still on probation, Nick Mihai. Good to see you too, Nick.
Thank you. I'm still hanging around. I'm still surviving, so.
Doing well. One day at a time, mate. One day at a time.
Could we splice in like a ticking clock sound effect there?
It's permanently in his ear. Like it doesn't change. It doesn't change. As a reminder, coaches, you can follow along to the Talking Split social media platforms such as X, Instagram, or YouTube using the handle at Talking Split. Dave Herbert Clinic is now up on the YouTube page for those coaches that wanted to go and have a little bit of a look at that. As a reminder, we do have a mailbag segment on the podcast towards the end of this year. So you can start sending in any questions or topics now. We've got 7 episodes left for this year. So those last 2 will be mailbag episodes. So anything you've got that you want sent in, send it in. Far less Oasis song titles littered throughout the pod this week. So appreciate those that jumped in and enjoyed those along the way. I did buy Guy Montgomery tickets during the week though, so we'll see what we can do with that as we go through this. Coops, NPP intro camp over the weekend. Was it better than the horrible SDP intro camp that we had from a couple of weeks ago?
Yes, it was a lot better. Thank goodness. No, we're really excited about that camp, and it definitely set the cycle off the right way. Which is obviously what we want it to be. But, yeah, it's a flagship event for us. Obviously, it's our most exciting prospects. We do it over 2 days. We're out at Xavier College, which ends up being a really good facility for us in terms of, where we can hold meetings. We've got recovery in the pool and so on. Herbie was out for the girls, which is always fantastic when we can get, a COE coach down and on floor with the kids. So, no, we were really pleased. Intent was good. Effort was good. Kids were really coachable. Still an issue of, we haven't seen them in so long. We haven't seen them for upwards of 6 weeks. I think it's something like that, from the end of the last cycle coming into this new one, not really including the trials. And so, again, we probably got ahead of ourselves a little bit around structure. And
you didn't go back and listen to the pod, did you?
No, I didn't. No, I fixed it for SPP camp Saturday.
Yeah, gotcha. So this Saturday is just going to hum.
Oh, this Saturday, yeah it's going to cook. So, yeah, it was definitely something for us, again, to go back and look at. Okay, we've just got to remember to come in with the lowest expectations around what they remember and just build from the ground up.
Is it odd?
That's pretty much how I take most of my training sessions, right?
Every week.
I'm just going to assume they have not remembered anything I've told them. It's don't a great way to start.
Don't take it personally. I think it happens to everyone as coaches. Like, it is not specific to you, unfortunately, that we all go through it. And it's like, I'm sure I spoke about this last week. It was an infamous moment where one D Best, not the best, like Darren Best, had to remind one of his players to refrain from assuming a help position off a strong side corner at one stage. And it's like, if they don't remember that, what are they? Like, this is the thing. Like, they just get into habits where unless they're seeing it all the time, really difficult to expect them to be able to transfer that back.
I had our first SPP session on Monday night at Mulla Mulla, which was fantastic to obviously, start off that program, and we're really excited about it. And we had a defensive transition segment we've spoken about on the pod, especially the context of successful D-trans to winning international games in particular. And, after the segment, we had a quick circle up, and I just, quick quiz. I was like, who kind of works on D-trans every session at their association? And 3 out of 22 kids put their hand up. And that just shows, what is either being taught or not being taught, and how that is, affecting what happens when these kids get to us.
Can I just ask something quickly? Because I think I've asked you this before, Coops. A lot of the complaints I would get when I was around the junior space is, I've only got half a court, so how do I do D-trans? And what was your answer to me when I threw that one at you? It was probably about 6 months ago, I reckon.
Oh, geez. Okay. I hope I get this right. Would be to combine with the coach down the other end.
It's an easy one, right?
Much nicer than what I thought it was going to be, which was figure it out.
Yeah. I was trying to think, how much swearing would I have done? No. You can combine down the other end. Like, there's so many ways around it, and there's so many fun drills that you could do that, don't necessarily impact, a ones and a twos team, or, whatever you might think the problem is about combining with the other end. But that should definitely not be an excuse to not work on defensive transition. I think something else I may have said to you, I'm hoping I did as well, is that every possession should finish with D-trans positioning. You know, so you can always get back to half court if you're working on your offense.
Safety's easy.
Yeah, right, yeah. Exactly. You know, get your ROS or get your pillars or whatever you call it and just get that done every possession.
Yep, and it's a great point you make, D-trans in particular, because, I mean, we had an athlete recently that was just, every time we spoke about D-trans, was just like completely like wrong spot, didn't understand, like could not fathom it whatsoever. And it's like, well, okay, let's have a chat. Like, do you know what we're talking about? And she's like, I have absolutely no idea what D-trans is. Like, defensive transition? Like, have you never been spoken about this? She's like, not once. Wow. Like, I've never heard of it before. And like, she's an under 16 athlete now. Wow. It's like, man, if this is not hitting, and it's like, understand why. Like, if you don't know, well, of course. And like, we're talking at the level as if she does know. We just assume knowledge in that sort of world. And even at one stage, there was a possession where I think the shot went up and she was on defense and she went to safety. And it's like, hey, love the effort. On the wrong team to go there, but you know, the attempt to leak out and get a layup, I love that. Let's say no problems there, but there is that assumed knowledge from a lot of our kids, and pretending that we just they'll be okay. They won't just be okay. We do need to do some teaching in this world. In particular, they might have played for another coach who had different defensive transition rules, then have come to you, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, we sent three to the glass, or we didn't send three to the glass. We sent one, and we got, you know, two at smother and two at safety, or whatever the case might be. So you do have to be a little bit careful coming in. And it's interesting that you've had the same problem with the NPP kids as you did with the STP kids recently. It doesn't matter how good an athlete you are, you can still forget stuff. And unless you're around that environment continually, complex. Because I know, like, I'm going to speak for Zoe on the weekend. Obviously, the girls' camp, same deal. That's where I was involved for most of my weekend. As you said, Coops, Herbie in, did some shooting stuff with the kids, filmed all their shots, gave them some feedback, gave them some pointers to go down and put in the journal so that they could go back and relate to it. And we were talking to one of the kids, and it's like, ask for feedback. Like, the kid asked for feedback, and it's like, hey, you've been getting feedback all weekend now. Like, did no coach say anything to you? She's like, nah, no one did. And it's like, oh, I saw Herbie, like, give you pretty direct feedback on what was required here. Maybe go write that down. But making sure that our players understand what is the right message to take away from that as well. Like, we do have to do those little check-ins along the way. It's like, hey, does this make sense? And you can guarantee 10 out of 10 kids will sit there and say, yep. Okay, maybe can we unpack that a little bit? When I say this, what do I mean? What would you do in this situation? Like, that learning check along the way, I think, is really vital for our kids, because otherwise we're just assuming they know, and as we're finding out, they don't. And it's not the kid's fault. Like, if they genuinely don't know, it's our job to fix that as coaches. So we do have to be careful that we don't just assume. Look, helping off the corner, to be fair, I would like to think has been taught a couple of times now. So I can understand where the frustration might come from in that one. But we do have to be a little bit careful that if we are introducing a new concept, or if we're doing something that we haven't done before, just understand they're not going to pick it up straight away. Like, the MPP kids might, because they've been around a lot more basketball to that point where their base is higher. Like, they just understand more. But we do have to be a little bit careful with that. Shout out to the officials that also came in over the weekend as well. So this is the first time I think we've really worked with our officials department. In particular, for the MPP camp, they sent down six officials, three on day one, three on day two, that observed the camp, took in what was being taught, understand why it was being taught. We'd spend a little bit of time with them and say, well, look, you know, similar sort of deal. This is what defensive transition is. Like, you probably hear coaches yelling out safety. Do you know what safety is when we're saying this? Like, where does that impact on where you have to run as a referee at times, those sorts of things? Even just showing them, hey, this is like one on-ball screen coverage. And I think we went with like hard show. And we went through all the teaching points in hard show, and they're like, Jesus, a lot, isn't there? And it's like, yeah, that's one. Like, that's one way of guarding an on-ball. We've got like eight. So our kids have to remember all this sort of stuff. So, you know, just a little bit of collaboration, I think, went a really long way. And for mine, it was really interesting watching Dave Herbert was doing some shell drill stuff when he was in and talking about stop playing with your hands on the offensive player. If you're the defender, get up and into their space, sure. But play with your hips, play with your body, play with your stomach. And I know you've spoken about it at length too, Coops, especially from the international experience, but just get your hands off. And we had the refs there and calling it. And the second a player put hands on, whistle straight away. And you could normally see the player turn around like a little bit frustrated. It's like, hey, adjust. You know, this is what this is going to look like. And I know, and I didn't see the boys' second game in particular, but I can speak for the girls' one. They were probably the best two officiated games that I've seen, all because there was a bit more understanding on the official side as to, hey, this is how this needs to be reffed. But also from our side, and like, well, we know how we want the kids to be able to play and the buy-in that's going to have to come from the other side by educating them as to, hey, this is why we get frustrated when this happens, or this is why we teach things a certain way. I think that two-way collaboration paid off for both. I would hope those officials walk away saying, hey, that was actually a pretty good experience. We can do that again.
It's crucial. It was fantastic to have them there, and their attitude and buy-in to what we were trying to do was awesome, you know. And obviously you look at, you know, some bigger programs around the world, like, you know, the US and so on, that there's always referees at their basket. You know, they take that responsibility off the coach. You know, you can do referee training by just being there. You know, we were having those conversations, like, with the refs, especially before our blue and orange game around. You know, they said, you know, how do you want us to officiate? And we said, you know, like a FIBA game, you know, like an Olympic game, you know, hands-on call it, but everything else, you know, we want it to be ultra-physical. You know, don't bail out players taking off on one foot, driving into a crowd, you know, talking about the things that we know are going to translate to the international game. And it was just wonderful to have them there. So hopefully this is a collaboration that's going to continue long into the future.
It'd be really great. Like, I was just curious how many referees came and visited that.
So I only threw it out to six. So okay. It was the referees from the Youth League finals.
Because it'd be really good just for coaches and referees to be able to just come in and see that two different groups working together to achieve the same goal.
Yep. What was really interesting was talking to them. It's like, hey, we don't want, and I'll say this flippantly, the VJBL reffing, where a player just goes head down, I'll try and run into as many possible people as I can inside the key and throw something up in the hope that a call gets made. And they're like, yeah, we hate that. And it's like, oh, you too. Like, it's, you know, I'm glad it's not just us as coaches. And even I was doing some footwork stuff with the guards on day two, I think it was. And I went and spoke to the referees afterwards, and like, hey, your kids travel a lot. I'm like, no kidding. Like, I'm across that too. Like, I'm glad you saw it, because I certainly saw it. Like, they drag a pivot foot, they're too upright. I'm like, well, actually, here's why it happens. You know, when our players are upright, they tend to drag a pivot foot, especially coming to 2 foot stops. We're talking a lot more about pivots and play lower. And if, you know, that happens, your anchor foot will kind of stay where it is. And they're like, oh, okay, that's interesting. Just having them, it's like, well, what do you look for? Like, when you're reffing this, like, what do you actually look for? And they're like, well, you know, here's our point of contact, that's what we're paying attention to. And it's like, well, okay, cool, while you're watching there, we can be a little bit shifty over here and we can do something else. And that was kind of the message to the referees that I was talking to. It's like, well, our job is to make your job as hard as possible. Like, we want to live in the gray as much as possible, so where we can be more physical until you guys tell us not to be, and then we have to adjust and we have to try and make it complex on that end. So it was actually a really good experience, and I mean, thanks to the officials department for having someone come down. I thought it was a really good event, and I hope we can do it again more than anything else. But I think your point's valid, Nick. The more we can have coaches and a referee sitting in the same room and actually talk basketball, we are all involved in the sport because we love it. We have a vested interest here. We hear the horror stories of really bad run-ins between officials and coaches, and, you know, I've potentially been responsible for some of those over the course, both in my refereeing career and my coaching one, as it turns out. So I'm the worst of both worlds. But it is, like, what was really cool was the officials sat in on the journaling session, and they're like, oh, we don't do any of this. Like, this is, like, we walk out of a game and then we're kind of done. We don't think about this afterwards, and, like, we don't really evaluate what we've done and what we could do better and how we could go from it. It's like, yeah, okay, there's some stuff that we can start to work with in this world, where I think it's going to be beneficial for both parties. So, fingers crossed. Like, that's the goal moving forward. But speaking of moving forward, segue. There you go, Coops. There you go. Coaching progression. This is a topic that a lot of our young coaches really struggle with, but also our older coaches, in particular with, do I still want to progress? Am I content being where I am? But how do I still get better in this world? Because progression is not just I go from a third team to a second team to a first team. It is never that simple, and that linear pathway that I think a lot of coaches are really after, it doesn't exist. Like, it's, for mine, it doesn't exist anyway. I don't see any way in which it does, unless you're following your child up, in which case, if you're the parent coach, you probably have to go wherever they go anyway. But even then, they might get to a point where they already have a coach in that space. And, like, Nick, I know you've come from association land recently. Like, it's, what does it look like there from what you've seen in that space?
With progression. Can I just say, just before that, it's, we'll say the words ironic, that the last couple of weeks we spoke about feedback, which is the dirty word for players, and now we're talking about progression, which in my opinion is the dirty word for coaches.
For sure.
Right? Yeah. So it's, I think sometimes we misinterpret what progression is. I mean, you hit it before when you said it's not about linear and just moving from one position to another. It's about how good you are in the current role you're in, how you can expand in the current role you're in. Because I really believe that if you do a good job in your space, it's much like a player on a Friday night. If they're good at basketball, someone's going to find you, right? And it's the same with coaching as well. If you do a really good job, no matter what level you're at, someone's going to find you, someone's going to identify you. So I guess in association land, doing a very good job with your team in terms of terminology, understanding, having that growth mindset really puts you in that progression stage to go, hey, maybe we'll invest a little more time in this coach going
forward. Did you find it hard trying to differentiate between a coach that wins and a coach that develops as for how they progress? Because they're not necessarily the same thing.
Yeah, I actually think it's one extra tier on top of that, right? So again, coming from a club, Casey, we have a system base that everyone runs. So we had to figure out, well, are they good coaches or do they really know the stuff? Because that's two different things as well. So we had to be very careful because they would come at me with all the terminology and all the words. Hey, I ran this the other day, looked really good. I go, yep, really good. But then I'll be like, well, why did you run that? Why did you run that? Why are we putting that in our program? So we had to be careful on that tier as well. So giving them avenues to expand outside of that was really important as well. That's where the SDP stuff comes into it. So I was very lucky to be hub lead as well. So anyone that I thought, you know what, we can probably progress you. You could probably be a first team coach at some stage. Come down to SDP on a Monday night, jump on a basket, start coaching kids you've never coached before at a higher skill level than you've ever coached. It's sort of like a baptism by fire to start off with.
Yep. Did you find the same stuff coming through, Coops? Like as a younger coach, like you found your own avenue, of course?
Yeah, I mean, things are a little bit different when I started. It wasn't as system-based. Like, you know, you had to kind of come up with stuff on your own, but it kind of forced you to not put system before athletes and to be a little bit more holistic in your approach in, okay, I've got this, you know, these this age group of kids, you know, what are they about? What are they good at? What do they need to learn to get to the next level? You know, what are some of their dreams? You know, can we start, you know, creating some things within, you know, our structures that's going to help them achieve those? And so, yeah, so it was very much about just, again, kind of coming back to what Nick said, you know, can I just do the best job possible, but can I do it by really making sure that I'm putting these athletes first, putting them in positions to succeed, putting them in positions to enjoy the game? Because that back then, particularly for me, that's how I thought I was going to get the next job, by being identified for being able to do that. Yep. But just quickly, when we're talking about this topic, the thing for me, when we're talking about progression as a coach, for me, that equals one word: trust. Can you be trusted to understand how to utilize a system, even though you may have, you know, a completely different group of kids one year to the next, or kids with different strengths and weaknesses? Can you be trusted to make, you know, the right recommendations each game as an assistant coach? Can you be trusted to do the film work behind the scenes? Can you be trusted to show up? So when we're talking about progression, I think it's really important for our coaches to understand and do some self-reflection is, how trustworthy am I? How trustworthy am I in what I'm trying to do and the people that matter above me that are going to make some key decisions around where I end up?
Yeah, it's a great point you make there, because I mean, I came through the same era and generation, I suppose, as you did as a coach, and I was a bit the same. Like, I was sort of not rudderless, but I was like, geez, I don't really know what I am. Like, am I a flex coach, am I a shuffle coach, am I a triangle coach? Like, I don't really know. And it was only kind of working out by being around a few people at the time. It's like, oh, skill development. Like, that's probably the niche there, where it's like, oh, no one's really doing this well. Everyone's running offenses as such and not really teaching. It's like, well, actually, that's probably an area I can kind of get into that kind of accelerated my progression. Mm. Like, it's funnily enough, when you have better players, you tend to win more games. Like, it was kind of that mindset of, actually, if I just make my kids better, I'll be in more games down the stretch. They'll have seen this before. The next leap it probably made was like small-sided games. Like that was probably the next progression of my coaching that kind of tipped me over an edge of, oh, actually, not everything has to be a drill for a drill's sake, and it's not all built on just repetition and nothing but repetition. There was more to it. And I think for a lot of coaches, we get really enamored with the drill, and you know we are potentially hurting that by posting drills every Monday night on the Talking Split Instagram page. However, you will notice they are not end block drills. They are drills that entice gameplay, that have a little bit more to it in that sort of world. So I think for mine, that was probably the one that kind of got me. Okay, skill development's actually fun. Like I love the X's and O's still. Like I still I love mucking around with stuff, and it's like, oh, nothing gets me more joy than going to a training session, seeing a coach put in an offense, and it's like, I reckon I can make it better. Like I can find a different avenue to get to wherever you want, or you can. He's a counter that you may not have thought of, and all that sort of stuff. But the skill development stuff actually makes the players happy, and happy players equals happy coaches.
It's really interesting that you were thinking about back then, kind of what we talk to our players about, which is creating a point of difference for yourself. You know, what can I, you know, potentially do better than anybody else that's going to make me needed or wanted or selected?
Yep.
Which is cool. Nick, were you ever thinking about a point of difference from a coaching standpoint?
Absolutely. I would say probably around those mid-2000s, 2012, 13, 14, I was much more going, right, I'm going to be up the floor defensively. That's going to be my thing, because we already had the shuffle at that point as well. So that was already instilled. Robbie probably remembers a little bit about that.
All too well. All too well. Jeez, we've got down a long way into the counters at times.
But it's just when you – I also think progression is part of reflection as well, like looking back on where you've come from to where you are now. Like I look at my progression as a coach and I go, when I first started, I was very comfortable – because under 14s, you could run zone in running zone very early on. And that, looking back at that now, I'd be like, what, you know, if I could speak to my old self, I'd be like, why did you do that? That is just, why would you detriment those kids at such a young age? But I think progression's there as well, reflecting on yourself and seeing that progression. My point of difference lately, probably the last couple of years, is really trying to get on the tech side of basketball. So understanding how sports code works, understanding huddle, and understanding how they all speak to each other as well.
Yep. So what does that look like for you? Like, how did you get into that space?
Getting into that space. So the first thing is find out who's using it. Like that's the easiest way to go and go, hey, can I talk to you about it? How does it work? What does it do? What's the benefits of it? So like I spoke to a guy, Woz, who's in the building all the time. He's an absolute titan when it comes to this stuff. Like he's just next level.
The guru.
He is so good.
But that's also a guy that saw a bit of a niche in there.
Big time.
But he didn't create sports code. Like he found it from someone else, but is doing exactly what Nick's talking about. And it's like, well, actually, I want to find out more. And that thirst for knowledge of I want to get better at this and I don't want to just be good. I want to be like a world leader. And he is.
Yeah.
Like that's incredible in itself.
Yeah.
Sorry, Nick, keep going.
No, you're right. And if you get a chance to have a sports code license, and I won't sugarcoat it, they are pricey. They're not cheap to buy on your own. But if you're lucky enough to have one through either your association, things like that, that's where I would just grab a game, create a code window, see if I break down, see what it looks like, whether I could, whether I made mistakes, where I made mistakes. I mean, I do the same thing at NBL level. I break the game down. I make mistakes, and Luke Brandon will come over and speak to me and go, hey, mate, these three clips, they're not in the right order. Let's go through it. Let's find out what happens. So you got to be, you know, when you're dealing with that stuff, it's very, what's the word? You've got to be very pedantic in terms of what you're looking at, but you've also got to have thick skin when you're getting feedback on it as well, because there's always something. There's always something you'll find.
You will see Nick sitting behind the Phoenix benches at games. I notice they don't have you sitting facing the court.
I'm getting this a lot. It's just like I've never seen a guy sit so close to the court side and not be allowed to watch the game. And I'm like, welcome to my world. Everyone wants to do what I do. Trust me. You get to face a security guard. That's all you get. But basically, I face the side So that way, guys like Luke Brennan, Gibbo, and Sam, they can lean back, look at it really quickly, and judge whether they're going to do a video review.
So it's not a you can't be trusted with a distraction thing.
No. It's definitely not that. It could be. Who knows?
I get it. Look, I'd struggle. Yeah. In all honesty, like if I felt I was facing the court with a laptop in front of me, I'd struggle not to look up. Like that's where I was kind of curious as to
But when you are doing the coding, and you can speak to Woz about this as well, you're so like because you need to see everything about the game. It's really expanded my knowledge of like don't just look at what's happening. Have a look at that guy on the floor and that guy on the floor. You're so focused on it because you need to pick up these things and tag these certain things that I was like at halftime and I was like, oh, actually, they've all gone out the back. I've still got a minute to go. And then I realized it was two quarters and I was like, are we winning? Like I couldn't, I had to check it. So you do kind of forget that there's a game happening on the left-hand side because you're so focused on, and you know, maybe guys like Andy Lim might be a little bit different. Like he's also a guy that's done it for a long time, so he can probably just code and like check over his MacBook. But for me, no, I'm just locked into that thing. So
well, it's a different type of coding you're doing as well, because you're doing it real time, like the post game sort of stuff, Coops. Like I know you're very much into the film side of things. Like, did you see that as an avenue when you were first coming through as a coach? It's like, hey, if I get into this tech, this can really elevate me.
Yeah, I my first kind of foray into it was actually with you in Tamworth.
Yeah, okay.
So that, you know, our, was it 2012 Nationals or whatever we were. So I knew like that, you know, film was being used and so on, but never really had the opportunity to use it with any teams that I'd coached, you know, prior to that. And then obviously we roomed in Tamworth, and that was a big part of your portfolio with the team. And, you know, we would sit up late at night and cut film and watch the Under 17 World Cup and Simpsons times. In the background. Yeah, it was a good time.
It was a great week.
It was awesome, and that was my first chance to be like, okay, well, now I'm getting a first-hand view, and you were teaching me some things about, okay, this is what it looks like, this is how you do it, this is how it relates to actually showing the athletes. And then I was mucking around with it, and then I had the opportunity to assist Lucas Allen when I first moved to country, and that was the first time I'd seen sports code. And he was really big on it as another guy who saw, you know, that avenue to climb the ladder or progress. And, yeah, another guy that just sat down with me and said, okay, this is what it is. This is how we use it. And he took me through it step by step. And from that point, it was like, okay, you know, knowing film is one of the best teachers we have, and that sports code, this is how it worked and this is how good it could be. I was hooked, and it's been a big part of my coaching ever since.
They say, speaking on progression, let's speak about NBL. This is some advice that was given to me when I first sat down as an intern. They sat down with me and they said, there's three ways to be an NBL coach. You've either got to play 300 plus games in the NBL. You've got to be a skills coach who coaches and develops the top end athletes, or you've got to be good at sports code. That's it. They're the three. Pick.
But it's accurate, though. Like, you've got to get an in somewhere. Mm. And look, for those of you that aren't in the sports code space, because it does require a Mac and it is expensive, there's a whole lot of parameters around it. I know when I first got into the sports code world, I had to buy a Mac. So a little bit, $3,000 there. Then I had to buy sports code. Now, at that stage, you could buy the actual product. It wasn't a leasing system. It is now. But again, like $4,000 or something like that for that. So the investment was, well, okay, that's about $7,000 to $8,000 I'm going to have to invest into this. But for me, it was like, well, this is proof that I'm taking this seriously. Like, I'm not going to just outlay cash for no reason to get nothing back. And I was fortunate enough that I was a director of coaching at that time. So it was literally in one hand, out the other as the payment came through. But it's kind of what it was. You don't have to use sports code. Like, there's plenty of free like video editing software things available out there that you can go and use, but even just having a bit of an understanding and how I present film to players, is there a niche in this market? Like I did some stuff with a player a few years ago where I found a program, I think it was like Wondershare or something like that, which is a Mac program, but it allowed me to have four cameras going at once and then be able to sync them all up together. So we were analysing a shot and saying, hey, this is what I'm talking about. It looks good on this side, but over on that side at the same time, that's no good to us. So just having the ability to put those types of things together can be really powerful, because we know how much our players love to see themselves on film, but also learn more from seeing rather than just being told things. So from a progression perspective, I can't stress it enough. Get into the tech side if you can. Like, it's not easy, but worth it.
Even if you don't want to invest too much in the hardware, like I've used the slow-mo camera on your phone, which is a great way to show shot technique and things like that, and show where the kinks are in the shot. You know, if you want to start with there.
Yeah, absolutely. Story time, Rob.
Oh, here we go. Why do you always give me a warning? Because I'm terrible. I feel like I like sweat bullets when it's like I've missed something.
I know I've told this story before on the pod, but hopefully for any new listeners, it resonates. Just going on one of the other of those three ways to progress, especially to the pros. Obviously I had some time with the Bendigo Spirit, which was a fantastic opportunity to be with that program whilst I was the director of coaching at Ballarat, and I was working with both male and female athletes, but to go up there and work with, you know, David Flint, Simon Pritchard, you know, Walshie, it was really cool. It was a really great experience. It helped further develop me as a coach. But how I got there was Joy Burke, who had been an import for the Spirit, had come to us at Ballarat as one of our imports for Siebel. And one of the things that I was doing that I was really proud of was we put this big development program together from juniors all the way through the pros. So I was working these guys out, you know, four or five times a week. And so Joy and I developed this really good relationship. She really enjoyed the workouts that we were going through. One of her friends from her time at the Spirit was Kelsey Griffin. Kelsey just happened to call Joy and was like, oh, you know, I really need a workout. We're heading into preseason. And she's like, actually, there's this guy in Ballarat who's pretty good. You know, do you want to work out with him? She's like, well, okay, yeah, let's do it. She's like, I'll drive to Ballarat tomorrow. So she jumped in the car and drove down and we did a, you know, 45, 50-minute workout. And then I think it was like one more workout and I was getting a phone call from Simon Pritchard saying that Kelsey Griffin says that, you know, she loves what you do from a skill development standpoint and so on. We'd love to bring you in on staff. So it's absolutely a way to be able to do it. And to try and bring that back to our listeners and obviously provide some more, you know, tangible ways to do that. You know, are you looking at, you know, the top tier guys at your association? You're like, are you going to games and looking at, you know, what are their strengths and weaknesses? Are you maybe practicing on Sports Code or looking at some research material online around, okay, that guy's really good at this, but I reckon if he added that, he could be even better. You know, then you have some conversations with some assistant coaches if you maybe don't have an in with that athlete. You know, maybe you can kind of go that way. Hey, I really think if this player did this, I've got some free time. Or if you've got an in with the player, maybe you've established a little bit of a relationship. You might be a development coach or a youth league coach. Hey, I've got a spare hour on, you know, Wednesday morning. Would you like, you know, I could come in and rebound for you. We could work out. So you establish a relationship. You come in, you rebound the ball, help them get a couple extra 100 shots, and then you start saying, oh yeah, like your game on Saturday was awesome. I actually think if you added this, it might help you progress. And the thing about those guys, and Nick, you'll be able to talk to this obviously because you're in the environment at the moment, they want to get better. They want to be coached. One, because that's just who they are, like they're competitors, like they want to be the best. But two, it's their livelihood. So if you can help them be better, they're going to earn more money. So there's definitely an avenue to be able to do that.
Yeah, it's interesting you hit on Nick with that one in particular, because Casey Basketball did release a video clip on the great Nick Mihai during the week, which was a little bit of a thank you tribute as he's now moved into the BV landscape. But one of the bits of advice you were giving to coaches, Nick, was you got to volunteer some time.
Mm.
Like, exactly where I was going to go to next. So story time.
Button's starting to get worn down.
You probably shouldn't have put us together.
Right? Yeah, no, that's probably what it is. I've got to tell you, we're a Zoe away from losing our entire day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I just started at Danny Nong. I was coaching juniors and I saw down one of the back courts that the Siebel team was training. So I walked over and I met Darren Perry for the first time and I just said, hey, mate, like I'm new here. I'm not looking to do anything. Can I just, I'll do the clock for you if I get to watch you practice. And he's like, yeah, cool, whatever. So then I just started doing the clock, and then about 4 weeks later, he walks over and he goes, "Listen, mate, since you're here anyway, you may as well coach with us." Because he was that type of guy. So then the rest is history, right? But absolutely, go find – there's something at every stadium these days. There's a big-time program at everyone's association. There's something you can go look at, hang around. Hey, can I rebound? That's all you have to do. Like, can I just – I'll stick around. I'll rebound for you. You know, just something like that gets you into that door, if that makes sense. And the rest is just history after that.
So. Well, it's amazing how often it motivates you to go and do more work. Mm. Like, we've all been in that situation where we've walked off a workout and, gee, that was fun. Like, for me, usually the ones where they make shots and I don't have to run and chase rebounds, they're the ones I enjoy the most. But it is one of those things, too, where you start working with a player, you see some traction, and it's like, hey, they're starting to move in a pretty good direction here. There's been some improvement. How do I stay ahead of the curve? And so that motivates you to, well, okay, what are they doing? Like, what are they doing somewhere in Europe? What are they doing over in the States? Who is this player like that they modeled their game on? Can I get some film of them? And now I can start to work out what else I can start to be teaching or how I can start to make some adjustments along the way. It is one of those things where it's almost motivating to go and work with players to try and get them better again. Like, I remember out at Kilsyth when I was out there with Justin Schuler, like, Chris Patton was always really big on, hey, I'm doing 20 minutes of shooting after every practice, so you better stick around. It's like, oh, cool. Great way to build a rapport, though. Like, so for me, like, that was a great relationship that I was able to sort of foster by, yeah, mate, I'll stick around. Like, no worries. Like, if you could stick that corner three a little bit quicker, that'd be fantastic. So I'm not chasing that thing. But, you know, to be fair to him, he was great. And there were times where he's like, hey, I've got that one wrong. Like, that was a really bad shot. I'll go chase that one. I was like, thank God, Chris. Like, but it does happen a lot that just doing a little bit of extra work is a habit that you start to build on, and all of a sudden it's like, hey, this is an expectation now. Like, if you want to be part of this program, you got to go do some extra work, whether it be S&C, whether it be time on court, whatever the case might be. If we expect them from our players, we should expect it from ourselves. Now, I'm really cognizant as well, of course, that so many of our coaches out there are volunteers already. They are potentially coaching under duress because their kids are playing and they couldn't find a coach. They're maybe just being talked into it again because they used to be a player and they're looking to coach, whatever the case might be. There are a lot of volunteer coaches out there. But it doesn't make you immune from doing the work in that space. Like, you want your kids to enjoy the sport. They'll enjoy it more if you're invested in it.
Might be a question for Darren as well, but are the state practices open to the coaches or not? Like, that's one that I get asked, and I was in the past it has been. Since COVID, maybe something's happened there. I'm not sure, but maybe you can answer it, Coops.
Heavily depends on the coach,
yep,
and heavily depends on the time of the campaign. So
the Queensland South coach doesn't just get to roll into practice before the tournament. Like, stay out.
We just send him video.
Efficiency.
Yeah. No, look, I encourage our state coaches, our country Vic Men state coaches, to open up practice. But if they are having a specific practice where they want it to be closed doors, I'll always respect that. If anybody ever wants to come into a state practice, all they have to do is email me, and I'm sure we can find a way to get them there and so on. I've actually, James McKinnon with our 16s last year or this year was a really good example, because we had a couple of network coaches who are fringe state coaches, and I just said, hey, look, you know, is there, you know, maybe 4 weeks we could get these guys on floor with you? You know, you could give them some of those jobs like the clock or something like that, just to get them around it, you know, feel the day-to-day, because obviously the value of that in, you know, hoping to go on to be a state coach is incredible. So, and he was fantastic doing that. So, no, definitely, if anybody's interested in getting into those environments, yeah, please just email me or Darren or Zoe or Jenna. I know they are definitely open to helping coaches in that way.
And that filters down, like you were talking about before, Nick. Like, hey, we think we see something, you come along to SDP with Casey. Like, there are so many venues that have stuff in them at the moment. If you're looking for something to do, let us know. Like, we can always find you something. I can guarantee you'll take something out of that session, whether it be how the coach communicates, whether it be a drill that you might like that you might sort of change a little bit, or even just straight up copy, whether it be, hey, I probably wouldn't do it that way. Like, that's all value in what you can get out of that as a coach, but that all helps you as you're moving through it. What are the biggest mistakes you've seen coaches make, Coops?
The expectation that doing one thing gets you the next thing. Like, that's probably the biggest one, right? And again, it comes back to what you guys were both talking about earlier, that this thing is linear, that you take one step, next step, next step. unfortunately, it just doesn't work that way, especially in Australia. You know, we don't have the jobs, we don't have the infrastructure that Europe or America has. And so you just can't have that expectation. I've seen a lot of coaches get very frustrated very quickly that it's not happening for them in that way, and take themselves out of the pathway or out of an association or out of coaching altogether, which is sad. So you just got to have that understanding. The ego, you know, we spoke about it last week. Ego is the enemy. You know,
it's going to hit the button. Yeah. But we've moved on. It's okay.
Okay.
You knew Marcus Aurelius. There you go.
Oh, I like your version better.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Is it too late or is it?
You knew Marcus Aurelius.
You know, everyone was going to feel unfulfilled if that didn't happen, right?
Yeah. Well, I'll be honest, I felt a little dirty.
Yeah. Yeah, look, ego is the enemy. You know, we know that, you know, any coach that thinks they should be, you know, coaching somewhere and they're not, and that starts to filter into them and how they're doing things, that trickles down to their players in terms of how, you know, they're coaching and just the feel of the team and so on. So, you know, as soon as you get to that point, it's dangerous. I was talking with a really good friend and listener to the pod, Darren Winterbine. The other day, and he was talking about a coach that he'd been dealing with, and that coach was starting to use some terms like unscoutable in terms of his offense.
Dangerous.
That's exactly what I said. I said, man, I said, when you start using terms like unscoutable, it's a slippery slope to, you know, to not being able to get to where you want to go. So those definitely are the ones that stick out.
Yep. What about you, Nick?
The ego one's a big one. It's definitely something that hinders your progression. I know that personally for two reasons, because I was that coach. It probably put me back at least 4 to 5 years, holding myself back by not accepting feedback and growing from it. So it took me a while to get through that. So I just know that from experience. And those, I guess the only extra one would be those coaches that think, hey, I can shortcut this. I can skip that and go straight to there. I don't need to do, and I know it sounds a little bit linear, but it's not, but there is a process you have to go through. I know there's no shortcuts, because I reckon early in my coaching career as well, I tried really hard to find them.
Hacking the system, I believe it's called.
Hacking the system. Yeah. Failed. The matrix has beaten me, and and the process continues. So they're probably the two biggest things, yeah.
Yeah, and it's funny because listening to both of that, it's like, yeah, I've probably been in both of those situations as well. Like, I look back on it now, and there were certainly times where I was looking for my ego to be fed. And so you just keep asking the questions until you got the answer you wanted. And it's like, oh, cool, they understand me and they relate to me. It's like, no, they're sick of your crap. Like, so they've just agreed with you to shut you up almost in a lot of ways. And it really is. It's just that trying to be in a hurry. Like, you cannot, and I cannot stress this enough, you cannot buy reps as a coach. It is just one of those things where, and look, I was that young, impressionable coach. And look, this does not apply to every coach out there, and I understand that, because I am one of those coaches that started coaching when I was 14. So I've had years in it where I probably could, because I wasn't trying to manage a work-life balance. I just had a sport balance, and that was kind of what I worked in, where I was in a real hurry to get where I was going. But consequently, because of that, I wanted to coach as much as I possibly could. And, you know, I was that sucker domestic coach that coached like 4 games on a Saturday, because it's like, yeah, cool, well, I want reps. And it was every age group. It was both genders. Like, I found ways to be coaching someone. And like, it was nothing for me to walk up to a kid and just say, hey, I think I can help. Like, do you want to get a workout in or something like that? And like, yep, no worries. And the amount of times the parent would say, hey, how much does it cost? And it's like, no, nothing. This is me. Like, this is my development just as much as it's your kid's development along the way. So for mine, I don't think you can shortcut reps. Like, just, it doesn't matter what you coach. Like, as long as you're coaching something, and as long as you're involved in that thought process of what would I do here, how would I do it, that's such a massive part of what we do as coaches. Because just because it works one way for one kid one week doesn't mean it will work the same way for the same kid the next week, or even a different kid altogether. Like, it changes so regularly. Our kids change so regularly.
Yeah,
as we go through it.
Absolutely. It's such a great point. While you're talking there, it started making me think about the other one, which is your why, like your coaching why. And as soon as that gets away from you, it can really cause problems in where are you trying to go, and yep. importantly, why are you trying to get there? So do you want to become a professional coach in, let's say, the NBL? That's where you want to go. You know, why do you want to do that? What's the expectation that you're going to get out of it? You know, how are you going to benefit the people around you? And then that should help drive your coaching, and especially to get you to doing things like volunteering more time or getting extra reps, especially reps with players that are going to be at that level.
Yeah, and it's funny you say that, because I was very early on, in particular, end goal in mind. This is where I want to get to with my coaching. Mm. And it's only the more I've coached, the more I've realized, actually, I don't really care. Like, if I get there, I get there. It doesn't really worry me. And to the point where that end goal's changed. And it changes a lot over time anyway, but I have no real interest in coaching hire. Like, I thought it was like, hey, coach a state team, then go to WASTAF, and then go to NBA. And, you know, it was that kind of thing. And it's like, Angela, I don't really care. Like, I just wanted to do a good job where I was by the end of it, in particular. And I look at my coaching now, and it's like, actually, I get more satisfaction out of coaching coaches than I do coaching players. Like, I still enjoy coaching players. Like, get to work it in with someone, it's a lot of fun, or sit on a bench, it's still a lot of fun for sure. But I have more enjoyment somewhere else than where I didn't think. Like, if you'd asked 16-year-old Rob, would you rather coach coaches or kids? It's like, kids any day of the week. And in fact, it wouldn't have been kids, it would have been professionals, like NBA, lights, all that sort of stuff. Like, that's what I would have said, whereas now it's changed. So it gives me a little bit more clarity on what I'm doing and why I'm doing it. So when I do go and coach a team, which will happen again at some point, it's like, well, why am I doing it? Like, is it to get me better as a coach? Is it to get them better as players? Is it to try and find the balance where I can relate probably a little more back to the kids we've got and the coaches we've got coming through? Because I am super conscious as well that eventually I kind of become a little bit irrelevant if I haven't coached recently. So people come to me with a problem. It's like, oh, here's how I'd solve it. But yeah, okay, that's relevant to 5 years ago when you were coaching, rather than what it's relevant to is like the here and now. So I think the why part of that, Coops, is bang on the money. There will be times, well, I'll probably go back to coaching, but it'll probably be like a bottom age under 12 team. And that for me is still progression, because I've got to remember how to coach kids at that age. Where, let's face it, the majority of our coaches probably do coach. They are in that under 8s to under 14 type bracket. Kids aren't the same as they were 5, 10 years ago. Like, you've got to talk to them differently. They relate to you differently. You've got to try and find ways to engage them and what you can do in that space as well. So it's amazing how setting some goals and just writing them down and working out, okay, is this feasible? Is this not? Is this like a pipe dream? Whatever the case might be, it'll help you work out your why really quickly. Like, not everyone wants to go and coach the Boomers and the Opals, and that's okay. Like, right. I hope they don't, because we need those coaches in a pathway somewhere else, coaching our state teams and our domestic teams and our VJBL teams and everything else that goes with it. So it's a difficult one. What sort of, I suppose, coaching assessments can people do on themselves? So thinking more insular, what would you assess on yourself before it's like, hey, I want to try and make this jump, or I think I can make the leap into something else? Is there anything you'd done previously, Coop?
Yeah, just some self-awareness. So going through that practice of making sure I'm really aware of where I'm at with my coaching and where I'm at with exactly what you said, those goals that I'd written down for myself. And then obviously this is a great time for when your mentors come in, because it's all well and good to say I've got good self-awareness, but yeah. You know, that's
maybe you don't.
Yeah, exactly. So I was really lucky in my journey to have someone, you know, who I've spoken about before, in Laurie Chiswick, who was just fantastic and really helped me, you know, get to these positions especially. But to be able to say, okay, you know, this is where I'm currently at. You know, this is what I'm coaching. This is where I've had some success. This is where I'm struggling. You know, am I ready for this? You know, what do you think? And so that process of just, yeah, self-reflection, self-awareness, and bringing in someone who knows you really well, to have that discussion, to have that process, was really beneficial.
Yeah, it's funny, and this probably ties in a little bit to the imposter syndrome that we were talking about last week on the podcast, and certainly appreciate the amount of people that sent messages in the last week or so saying, hey, I actually really resonated with me a lot, and that hit. So we do appreciate that. So positive feedback, always appreciated in this world. Feedback, not justification. There's a difference between the two of them. But it is one of those things too, when knowing when you're ready to move up. Like, and for a lot of coaches, that can be a really tough decision to make. Like, and you sort of started in that 14s group, Nick. When did you make the decision? It's like, yeah, I think I'm ready to get out.
And move to higher age groups.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess a lot of the times the decision is made for you, yep. you know, in many respects as well. Yeah, it's a tough one. I guess I put it down to feel, like understanding what the group is when you go up. Like a lot of the times when I moved up with 16s or I moved into 18s, I've coached them previously. So I already had that little bit of relationship with a couple of those players, which really helps you progress into those older age groups as well. That's usually a good starting point
yep.
to have too. I was just going to go back on when you were talking about assessments, some like physical things you can do. If your mentor is at your association, for example, in a game, get them to come into your timeout and go, every time that I'm generic, so I just say something vague that isn't a specific instruction, I need you to pull me up on it. It'll just keep you accountable. It gives a little bit of direction for the mentor coach to go, what do you want me to do to help you? Like, what is it you're looking for? That's something I've used in the past. And something really simple, and I think Peter Lonergan said it as well, is when you're whiteboarding and you're dealing with a lot of emotions and stuff because it's a quick, like, let's say you're down by a point or something like that, take a photo as soon as you've finished the whiteboard. And then the next day, if you can't understand it, they couldn't understand it yesterday at the game.
Doesn't help you when you've already lost by a point, though, unfortunately. Like, yeah, that's the self-reflection that you've got to go through, but it's kind of what it is. Like, and I think it does tie in a lot to the goals. Like, we hear it a lot about those SMART goals, but like, S is for specific. Mm-hmm. What do you really want out of this? Like, it's if you're engaging with a mentor, which I would always recommend every coach do in some capacity, whether it be someone in an official role like a coordinator or director of coaching or whatever you want to call them, or someone that's just external to it, like, what do you want them to evaluate you on? Like, if you're bringing in someone with a business background that has no knowledge of basketball, you probably want them to think about the community and the clarity of direction rather than, hey, was that baseline play pretty good? Like, they don't know. So be very specific about what you want out of that. And you'll know that as well. Like, I think we all sit there and it's like, hey, I know where my shortcomings are as a coach. Like, we've all got them. Like, it's no secret there. But it is, like, the mentor side of things, I think, for me as coach progression, that's where my life changed. Like, it's having people around you that helped you out with either a chat, a discussion, an intervention sometimes when that was required as well, when it's like, hey, this is not the path you want to be going down with this.
Is it the first thing you reckon? Because I really think it's super important as well. It's one of, for me, the most important. It's like, I think there might be something before it. Do this and then get a mentor. But like,
I reckon Have It Crack's probably just the first one. Yeah. Because like, I think back on it, it's like, you'll relate to this, Coops. Zoe bought me a golf lesson the other day. I've never played golf before in my life. Like, literally, don't pick up a club. Like, this is how little I know about what's going on in the golf world. And it's funny, I walked into it and I'm like, oh, I don't know how this is going to go. And it was one of the days where it was just like smashing down with rain. And they take me out to the driving range and like 4 meters in front are like a dozen ducks. And it's like, they're in trouble. Like, those ducks are getting hit. Like, this will knock it off the ground. Like, this is a problem. And funnily enough, the guy that was taking the lesson is like, hey, just hit the ball. I'm like, mate, not that easy. Like, we're coming from a low base here. It's like, no, I just need to sort of, like, you have to have a crack at this before I can actually coach you on anything. It's like, oh, okay. And even as we were going through the whole lesson, it's like, oh, okay, relate that back to what I go through and we can talk about that. And that doesn't quite line up with what we're doing here. But it's amazing how often people want the answers before they even really know what the problem is. It's like, you've actually got to find out where your peaks and troughs are before you can really engage a mentor to help with either of them. Because sometimes your peaks are too high and sometimes your troughs are too low. And that's where the ball went when I hit it. Very, very low. And there were some ducks that scattered pretty quickly, as it turns out. But that's kind of what you go through, I think, as a coach, in that you've got to jump into it and sort of find out, well, okay, what do I need help with? And if you just need help with, say, content for your training session, easy fix. That's not a problem at all. I think that's probably the easiest fix we can possibly get anyone. But if it's actual tangible feedback to help you with your coaching, that's a different requirement, I suppose, from your mentor. Like, I mean, how do you go about it, Coach? Do you engage the mentor, or do they sort of, like, the mentor will appear when the student is ready? Like,
I'm at a really, really interesting point in my career where Laurie and I have really developed more of a friendship. Yep. And because Laurie's been out of the game for a little bit, and she's been coaching women for mainly in her most recent past. So a lot of the actual basketball stuff doesn't connect as much anymore. But I still, you know, when I can try and, you know, catch up for a coffee. But I'm really in the midst of actually trying to find someone new. I actually just reached out to a coach recently who was available to go on my CV and was open to a chat. My plan was actually to give him a call this afternoon and start that new relationship and see if I can form that, because that that coach I've got a lot of time for, and and he's in a fantastic position to help me. But probably one of the most recent was you, Rob. You know, and we you know, tongue in cheek said it last week that Rob's both a mentor for Zoe and myself, but it's true. And you know, what was it, maybe last year that I said, or maybe the start of this year? Actually, it was January this year. Where I just reached out to you and said, hey, look, I'm feeling a little stale, a little bit worried about my language at the moment, worried about my court positioning. I just want to make sure that I'm on track in how I'm managing, you know, large group coaching, making sure that my teaching points are getting across. And obviously, you know, like you always are, we're really generous with your time and came down, filmed me, recorded me, you know, took some notes. And obviously that was a fantastic process. So, yeah, so I'm at this strange kind of moment of trying to refigure, you know, who are my mentors and how do I engage with them. But that was probably, yeah, that one in particular was really beneficial.
It's funny how people here get a mentor and they think, oh, who's this one person that can solve all my problems? But in reality, it's probably about five or six people that collectively are going to work towards that. Like, what have you done in the past, Nick? Like, how have you engaged with people, or have they just kind of appeared and just sort of seen something in you and almost made the first move?
Yeah, it's I've never actually specifically gone to someone and go, I hereby want you to be my mentor. Right? It's never been that official. It's just kind of grown into that relationship over time. It's definitely more than one. I think that's really important as well with different philosophies. I'm not too over, all right, what does this mentor do? And what is this? It's just, do I have a connection with this person? Some of the mentors I've had run-ins with, we've resolved them and we've actually realized we've got more in common because we're clashing heads because we're so similar. So we've just continued to communicate with each other, and there's a lot we can bounce ideas off. But you don't necessarily have to get advice just from mentors. So, for example, when I first did the Hub Lead job, I had to do the skills days, and they go, all right, here you go, there's 150 kids and you're running it. Okay, cool. So I knew Dom Lenossier was coming in, and he's a really good communicator with kids. Obviously being a teacher as well as a coach is a bonus. So I got him to just evaluate, very similar to you, Coops, where am I standing? What's my terminology like? When I'm speaking, am I addressing the group? And then he also evaluated me when I was presenting to the coaches. This is what we're running today, this sort of stuff. And he gave me his feedback. And then I asked for the same thing from Dave Peters, who I worked with for a long time. But they're two people I trust, right? Like, that's the other thing. Like, are they necessarily mentors? Probably not. But they're definitely two people that I would really respect and trust their opinion if they give it to me.
Would you ever ask your players?
Yes.
Yep.
I believe trust and a bit of rapport has to be built before then. Actually, I think I told you a funny story time.
Oh, yeah. I think we're not paying per jingle on this one.
It's in my contract where I've got to have at least two stories
per podcast. He's on probation. You can't fold him.
We've got to give him over once, I mean.
When you are making sure that you have those open conversations with players, be ready to answer some real questions when you build rapport. Last year, I was talking to my team. It was the later stage of the year, probably about 6 months in, and I was saying to them, how do you guys want to play? What do you want to achieve? Those sorts of questions. And I was writing them all down, and then one player put his hand up. He goes, Nick, and like in a shakily voice, like he was almost hesitant to ask me, he goes, what do you want from us? And two reasons, like it threw me a bit because it was such a direct question and so powerful. Like, I was so proud of him to ask an adult.
It's quite profound, yeah.
Yeah, question that direct to me. But I was also like instantly a little bit disappointed in myself, the fact that he has to ask me that. You know, like I haven't shown him. And I spoke about the first time I was on this podcast, like I don't need meetings. I really make it clear in my training sessions. And he's like, what do you want from us?
And I answered him, and it was kind of on the path. But then we came to the game and went in the group. I made sure it was in the group in front of everyone as well. And I go, hey, mate, that was an amazing question you asked me during the week. And I'm just letting you know, I think I let you down on two fronts, that you didn't know it, what the answer was. And I don't think I answered you correctly, but I went and did research, and this is what I'm after. And that really, when you can build that sort of rapport with your players, that's the most powerful thing. It's not about the X's and O's. It's about that those moments right there.
Yeah, it is. What about you, Coos? Do you ask your players for feedback on, hey, do you think I coached you well, hard enough? Did you need more from me at any stage? Did you feel like you could ask that?
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah. If I'm having a face-to-face conversation, it's similar to Nick, where I want to have that connection with that athlete. I've also done surveys, so, you know, feedback surveys on, you know, how did we go this year? How do you think I did? What would you change? I ask my MPP athletes at the end of each cycle, I say, if you were the HPC, what would you what would you change? You know, when we're talking, you know, we talk about it all the time, it's about the athletes. So if it's about the athletes, I want to know, you know, what they want, what they need, and how I'm impacting, you know, their career and their enjoyment in the sport.
Yep. I've certainly asked before, when you get under 12 and under 14 kids, they're not super specific. I asked my under 18 girls team and they nailed me on everything. Like, it's from, we don't like those shoes when you wear those ones, to we don't like when you stand up and coach because that's too aggressive for us. We need to strip that back a little bit. And it's like, oh man, okay, I'm not asking this again. Like, it's, I felt attacked as you come out of it. But I think it is a two-way street. Like, we give so much feedback to players, we need to be able to receive it the other way. And if we can change something that allows the players to play better and succeed, why wouldn't we change it? But we can only change it if we know about it. So I think the ability to go sort of two-way on that is really important. It's funny, though. The more we've spoken in this pod, the less I think it's been about coaching progression. And I think it's probably more just holistic coaching in how to be a good coach, which is in turn a good person.
But also to progress is to build relationships with players. I'm seeing it at every level, right? Like, I'm seeing what they do pre-season in like NBL teams and stuff like that. They're sitting down having coffees with them. That's just part of it. That's part of your progression.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Probation, looking pretty good.
Hey, look out.
Yeah, yeah. Found a way to bring it back after all of that.
I had to double your story time and I had to contribute somehow.
No, like, we've done it. But it is one of those things, like, coaches, don't be, it doesn't matter if you're young, old, wherever you're at on the pathway, it's, you know, the idea is to be a better coach tomorrow than you were today. That's ultimately what it comes down to. So that self-reflection is a big part of it. Finding a mentor is a big part of it. Not being in a hurry, really big part of it. It's all these sorts of things. And, okay, have you got the team that you necessarily want this season? Maybe not. But be the best coach you can for those kids, because ultimately they're the ones we're in this for in the first place. And if we don't have kids, we don't need coaches anyway, so don't worry about it. So it is genuinely one of those things where, as coaches, our job is to just make our players better, like, make them happy, like, keep developing them, keep coaching them, all those sorts of things. So there is a pathway for everyone. Everyone can progress in their coaching if they want to. There are certainly plenty of avenues for that. Will it be where you want it to get to? Maybe, maybe not. But if you worry about your own development, you'll be able to get there eventually, or at least a long way down the path. All right, last bit for the pod.
Something to post on Facebook. Let's go.
Like me on Twitter.
Okay, so we did run this a little while ago. It's been a while, Coos, to be completely fair.
Yeah, like, I'm blown away. Like,
some throwbacks, yeah. Like the ICQ days. Yeah. Like, it's been a while. but it's just for something we saw on social media that we kind of liked. And I think it kind of resonated a little bit with what we went through today, which was a tweet from Carl Reed Jr., who's a college football analyst. And the tweet was, he's like, I got this advice early on in my coaching and it resonates with me still now, and I pass it on to everyone. They don't respect you at the bottom. They ignore you in the middle and they hate you at the top. So consequently, you'll never have everyone's approval. So just focus on what you're doing and be good at that. And for mine, that hit on so many different levels, because as a junior coach, no one's listening to you anyway, but there's also no expectations. So there's positives as to what you're going. In the middle, you're just in the middle with everyone else. Like, there are so many people in that middle ground. The better you get, the more people dislike you. It's just kind of part and parcel of the whole thing. Unfortunately, we do experience that tall poppy syndrome a little bit as coaches. We just have to put up with it. But I think it is one of those things where if you just do the best with what you've got, where you're doing it, you'll be able to sleep at night. And that's a big part of what we do. looking for a name for that, incidentally. I've got nothing for it. But
I've got a Marcus Aurelius quote, if you want it. Well,
you knew Marcus Aurelius.
Jeez, I need my fingers are getting blisters on them.
Yeah, Nick had two. I needed two. You know how competitive I am.
Yeah,
okay. The tranquility that comes when you stop caring what they say or think or do, only what you do. And obviously, again, I think I've said on the pod before, and that's not about ignoring people and not caring. You know, it's about not allowing other people's opinions to affect you. And especially, you know, when you do get to the top, you know, or you know, you're high in your association and people are trying to bring you down, as long as you're doing the best job that you can, as long as you're operating out of, you know, love and kindness and trying to help the people around you, then that's all you should worry about.
Yep, like it a lot. That does wrap us up for this week. Thank you both for jumping in. We're on a, I'll give you the topic of next week's podcast, Halloween special next week. You know, timely as all. Things that scare you as a coach. So coaches out there, if there is anything that that does trouble you slightly, we'll throw it out as a question on Instagram this week as well, and we'll see if we can get some responses to come back from the coaches out there. But things that scare you as a coach is what we're discussing next week. Hey, can we have a chat after this? Is usually one of them for me, and it's like, oh, this could go one way or the other. This could be either a great chat or a really terrible one, but we'll see where it ends up. But thank you both for jumping in. Coaches, we'll catch you all again next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Talking Split Podcast. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform, and don't forget to share and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.